Hello, welcome to this podcast. My name's Dan, aka Lucin. This is Criminally Underrated, the podcast where we celebrate the most underrated songs from your favourite artists. This week, discussing Florence and the Machine with me is my boyfriend, Michael.
Hello.
If you haven't ever checked out an episode of this podcast before, basically the setup is that I have a different guest every single week, and that guest brings three of what they consider the most underrated songs from their favourite artist. And this week, Michael's picked three songs from Florence and the Machine. We will go through each of the songs, and he will try and convince me that his songs that he's picked are in fact criminally underrated and belong in the top tier playlist of most underrated, criminally underrated songs of all time.
I need to correct you on one thing. I don't need to try.
Can you stop being so sassy? This is my podcast.
I'm sorry.
Jesus
Please
Christ.
Let me leave.
I invite you on here at the goodness of my heart. If you like this podcast, then make sure to leave a review, make sure to rate, make sure to follow. If you want another place to actually agree or disagree with anything we have to say today, then make sure to leave it in a review. If you want any extras, then you can head over to Patreon, where there is an extended version of this podcast you can listen to, and the video version if you want to see our mugs. So yes, today with me to discuss Florence and the Machine, I have Florence mega fan, my boyfriend, Michael. Welcome to the podcast, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime.
And as a disclaimer for anybody that can't understand what I'm saying, I am from the northeast of England. For those American fans out there that are going, what is that accent? I'm from Middlesbrough.
I'll put subtitles on. There'll be a transcript. Florence and the Machine. Let's talk about Florence and the Machine. Florence Welch is an artist. The Machine is the band.
Yeah.
But they don't have a face. Really?
No, not all the time. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not.
I heard a rumour that the Machine was actually the fan base.
It's an incorrect rumour.
Okay, well.
I'm lying, I don't know anything.
Well, basically, when we refer to Florence and the Machine, we're talking about songs written and are about Florence, basically, because she is the whole creative mind behind the entire process, as far as I'm aware. We're just going to gas her up this whole episode because we're both really big fans.
You're going to know more than me, to be honest, babe.
I know more about the later stuff.
Yeah, that's why I'm not talking about it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be outshone.
Yeah. You're the guest, remember? It's your job to be outshone. Thank you. So, Florence and the Machine first burst onto the scene in 2008 with Kiss with a Fist is Better Than None. Kiss with a Fist is Better Than None. She's a beautiful woman from Camberwell, South London, and she has this incredible voice that I think is the thing that's always set her apart.
Totally.
But on top of that, she is also a brilliant songwriter, has this kind of very strange imagination that seems to present itself in some very dark ways sometimes, which is endlessly intriguing. And on top of all that, her poetry is just fabulous as well. So she's one of those artists that, for me, like, really has it all. She's released 5 albums throughout the years, her first one being Lungs, which we'll be talking about a song from Lungs later, and her most recent being Dance Fever, which came out in 2022. And yeah, you might know her for songs such as Dog Days Are Over, which has had a recent resurgence because of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh yeah.
You also might know her for Shake It Off, Shake It Off. Shake it off, shake it off. Oh, and Spectrum.
Yeah, Spectrum was actually
her only number one.
Her only number one. And this is why I think
she's not a singles artist, though, is she?
No, so her albums perform really well on the charts, but actually her individual songs don't, like when they release them as singles. And I think, like, people get quite surprised that, you know, like, songs like Dog Days Are Over wasn't even in the top 20.
Yeah.
Which is mental to me, because when you think Florence, my brain instantly goes Dog Days Are Over.
That's her most iconic song, I think. You also might know Rabbit Heart, that was quite big.
You Got the Love was really big as well.
You Got the... Oh, of course. You Got the Love. The cover of You Got the Love is a really big one as well.
Fine to be corrected on this, but I think it only got to, like, top 5 or something.
Yeah.
And even then, the version that she did with Dizzy Rascal ended up going higher than that. You Got the Dirty Love, that's what it was called. I remember them performing at the Brit Awards.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, God, that really was 2010, wasn't it? Jesus Christ, that was really that era.
I love You Got the Love, but that's not her original song, and she's such a good songwriter that. Yeah. This is why I think, as an artist, she is actually underrated.
So many of her songs are
honestly
underrated.
It was so hard to pick when you said pick 3.
Yeah.
I had this list, I was just cropping back slowly and slowly.
So, Michael, how did you first actually discover Florence?
So for me, so Kiss with a Fist, it came out when I was doing my art foundation. So I studied art foundation, then went on to study sculpture at university. She's a couple of years older than me, but by the time she releases her music, it was almost like she was talking about a time that was my age.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So Kiss with a Fist, when she started off, she did art foundation as well in Camberwell. And I remember reading this story, but sorry, I've gone off a tangent here, but I remember reading this story about her where she came to foundation hungover. Mm-hmm. So she built a tent in her art studio space and pretended she was doing performance art, but she was just having a nap in there, which was like the most relatable thing to
me. So good.
It was so good. So at the time, like, I think she really kind of captured that kind of teenage angst for me. I remember the Kiss with the Fist video, actually, because I remember living in my parents' house, obviously, because I was 18, and having that, you know, box television in my room. I'm going to give away my age more now. And I remember getting ready for college every morning, or going to a foundation and watching music videos while I was getting ready. And I very much distinctly remember from this album, I remember Kiss with a Fist because it's so art studio. You can tell they filmed it in an art studio or something.
Yeah.
I don't know if they actually did, but it looks very, like, quite basic.
Student-y.
Yeah, like how they made the fire as well, which was just like, it was so scrappy. Like, it was just like these, like, kind of pieces of, like orange and red material that were just flapping up underneath a fan.
Yeah.
To make it look like a bed was on fire, which was just really cool.
Yeah.
I really related to that because I was very interested in sculpture and, like immersive experiences with no money. So I could very relate to her on that.
So there's an inspiration for you then in terms of your, like, artistic output as well as, like, you know, musical, emotional connection to the music as well.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. It was that time as well where, like, I think Paloma Faith was out, Adele was coming.
Yeah.
Then there was, like, Kate Nash as well.
Oh, yeah. Kate Nash was blowing up, wasn't she?
Yeah.
My fingertips are holding on to.
I love that song so much,
Kate. The cracks in our foundation.
You've gone and got sick on my trainers. I only got these yesterday. Oh, my gosh, I cannot be bothered with this.
So, the thing is, we were all talking like that. We were literally all talking like that.
There was that, like, Mockney phase of, like, music. And then all of a sudden you just had Florence, who was just, like, sounded like this, like, weird angel coming down.
And she was actually from South London. So if anyone should have actually had an accent close to that, it would have been her.
Yes, exactly. And, like, she was so, like, ethereal sounding, I think is a nice word.
That is the thing, yeah. Her voice is ethereal. And, like, her music has that kind of imagination and that kind of epic world building kind of quality. So my relationship with Florence, I guess it was a bit of a soft start for me. I listened to Florence, like, but only because she was on the radio. And it wasn't until I actually got my iPod when I was 16 that I really actually started listening to her. It wasn't really till the iPod that I actually really started discovering music for myself. But I think the first album didn't click for me initially, because I was a bit of a softie when I was a teenager. I mean, I'm still a softie. I'm totally still a softie. But in terms of my music taste, it's, like, really broadened much more. Like, when I was that age, like, anything that sounded a bit, like, dark or a bit weird, I kind of bounced off of. And that was kind of the same reason why I bounced off of Lady Gaga's stuff initially, was because a lot of it sounded kind of, like, weird to me and, like, scary. I really got into a handful of songs, that being actually Howl, Hurricane Drunk, Dog Days Are Over, and Cosmic Love. And Cosmic Love, I think, remains my favourite Florence song. So those songs were all on the first album. Actually, I think every single album that came out, my fan-ness, whatever you call that, grew a little bit more. I bought the CD of album 3 as soon as it came out. Album 4 wiped the floor with me. I sobbed at album 4. It was like getting to the point at this point where I was just so, so into it. And actually after album 3, that's when I first saw her live. Most recently, I actually saw her in London with my mum, because my mum is now, because of me, now my mum is a massive Florence fan. Florence is probably her favourite artist at this point.
Yes.
Because I bought the CDs and she went rifling through my CDs to put CDs in her car. And Florence was the one. Florence and Years and Years were the, and 1975.
Which album? For Florence?
It would have been How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful. She loves Ship to Wreck. It's like one of her favourite songs. And so, yeah, so me and mum went to see Florence and the Machine last year. Actually, it was the week I met Michael.
Oh, yeah!
It was, wasn't it?
Because
that was actually like when we actually first started dating. There was Florence was something we talked about.
Yeah, she gets so into it. She's probably shy and nervous outside stage, probably, you know, everybody has anxieties. Yeah. But you can't see any of that when she's on stage. No, she just becomes so immersed in the music herself. And she's just like, you know, throwing herself around. Mm. Like, she just kind of forgets where she is. I remember being towards the sides and she, you could hear the voice actually coming from her. Despite how big the venue is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you hear, you know, the sound from the speakers and, you know, like it's a bit all encompassing, but you could really specifically hear her, like her lungs, but her lung capacity. It's just mental.
Oh, yeah. She's insane. She's like the vocalist and a vocalist. She has it all. Not only voice, not only poetry, not only brilliant songwriting, but the live performance aspect of it is just so. She's like a magical creature that just whips you up into, like, I remember just being like, you know, that kind of euphoric state when you go to a show that's like so totally like you're not even in contact with who you are as a normal person anymore. Like you're like, you've elevated to like a totally different plane. She takes you there.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and it is, she's phenomenal. Michael, would you like to introduce your first underrated Florence and the Machine song, please?
Yes, I would. It's Hardest of Hearts from Lungs Deluxe version.
Okay, so Lungs was released in 2009, as we said, and was Florence's first album, and this was on the Deluxe repackage, so bonus songs, and therefore I can understand why it might be underrated. Do you want to have a little listen?
Yeah.
Let's have a little listen.
Always.
To remind ourselves of this song. Yes, so Michael, why have you chosen this song for me? What makes it underrated? And what, in your opinion, makes it criminally underrated?
As I mentioned before, I think Lungs was very much like, well, it was a first, but it's very much an album of singles.
Yeah.
So it's a bit all over the place, but I love all the singles individually. And I think a lot of the songs on that album almost overshadowed this one. I think it's one of those songs where you say Florence and Machine, and you say Hardest of Hearts, and people are just like, what? To my recollection, people that I met, they're not very familiar with that song.
This is the only one that you chose that I and had never actually heard.
Yeah, and I think it's because
I'm a fan.
I think it's from the Deluxe album as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And why I quite like that is because I think you can kind of tell that she, at this point, she was really starting to hone her craft a little bit. The lyrics in it are really beautiful, okay. I think. The sweetest of words have the bitterest taste, mm-hmm. I think. It's just really beautiful and poetic. The sweetest of words have the bitterest taste. When you first hear the words Hardest of Hearts, I think you think like, you know, like hard, stoic. But I think what she meant by my interpretation of it is that she means difficult. Like it's a difficult heart. What I think that she means from it is it's so hard to kind of articulate. It's difficult to articulate what she's actually feeling and kind of love for it.
Yeah.
People are probably screaming at me in the podcast, like, you're incorrect. But at the time, this is what I was taking from it. It's kind of like it was her difficulty trying to articulate love and to try and articulate to the object of her affection, essentially. And I think there was like this like really descriptive word as well, which is sticks to your tongue and shows on your face. Sticks to your tongue and it shows on your face. That's, I can really picture that. You know, like when you know, you can always tell that someone wants to say something, but they're just not. And they're kind of like, you know,
sticks to your tongue.
Yeah, you can see, you know, like when they're kind of like feeling their tongue a little bit. It's that.
That's quite clever.
Yeah. Huh? As I mentioned before, I think because I'm quite like a visual listener, like I love music videos. And all three songs I'm going to talk about, there's no music videos with them. They weren't released as singles. And this one wasn't released as a single either. But I can really picture it. Mm-hmm. And there's a kind of like pacing in it, which I really love, of like the start almost reminds me of like tapping a pen or a pencil.
Yeah.
Noise fidgeting. To me. And then all of a sudden the heartbeat comes in. Oh, it sound, to me it feels like a heartbeat.
Right, okay.
And I feel like it kind of gathers pace. And what I quite like about it is that she's almost like having a go at herself saying, why can't you just say this?
Yeah.
And then when it hits the chorus, to me that's her actually saying what she wants to say, but it's all in the head.
That's really interesting. I love the idea of like having, why can't I say something, but the word, what you wanted to say being the thing that you put into the song. Like, that's quite a cool way of doing it. Also, what you were saying about the heartbeat element of it, I think that with the tempo and with it relating to a heartbeat, it's faster than a normal heartbeat would actually be. Heart beating fast for anyone who is, you know, a human, it's gonna, that's why it, like,
if there's any human listeners out there
what I'm saying is that, like, once you kind of make that connection to the heartbeat, if it's moving faster than normal heartbeat, it will naturally create a sense of pace and anxiety within your body, and you'll connect to the emotion that she's trying to create.
What I quite like about it is that it doesn't necessarily get faster throughout the thing, but because it starts off quite fast.
Yeah.
But it gets louder and almost like more overwhelming.
Yeah.
From what I
like,
what,
that kind of drowns out the...
You kind of overlay, so like, I just feel like it's the anxiety and the heartbeat, and you can kind of just relate to that. And it's just the kind of angst of having all this love but not knowing what to
do with it.
Or how to really tell somebody how they're feeling.
Yeah.
And I think that's, again, as a closeted little gay boy
at
the time, I think that's what I really related to or resonated with at the time. And and it was that kind of whole talking in a mirror type visual with me of, like, you know, when you practice a speech or you practice what you're going to say to somebody, that's what it feels like. And that's what the chorus is to me. Just like her imagination of just like, it's so simple, just say this.
I love that you're literally making a music video for her in your imagination. It's so great, though.
Florence, I am available.
he's available for my music video. That's what's going on.
Unpaid.
It's true. I only listened to it for the first time like half an hour ago. And like, I feel like you sold me on the kind of like emotion of the song that I didn't necessarily get like upon initial listen. Like, my kind of first feeling towards it was that it doesn't quite go where I want it to go. There's a bit of a missing element for me.
Oh, so I disagree. Oh. So no, I completely know what you mean, especially with like ceremonials. It's almost like the grand like performance type thing. Whereas, you know, I mentioned about the kind of anxiety and her kind of almost like rehearsing what she wants to say. And it's sort of, for me, it's quite insular and it remains insular throughout. So I understand it doesn't necessarily go where you think it's going to go, but that's what I quite like about the song.
Okay. From a songcraft perspective, in terms of like forgetting what it's about, like the literal kind of journey that you're taking your listener on, I feel like maybe there's some other development that is needed. Doesn't necessarily go where I would like it to go, but I feel like there's maybe another development is needed. Oh, your wit's in the breakdown of our relationship. So Hardest of Hearts, like, I'm not completely sold on it, but I must say that like your interpretation of it is something that I hadn't thought of.
And you only listened to it half an hour ago. I think if you re-listen to it,
let it grow on me.
Yeah, it's a grower, I think. And I think this is it, because I had that album on repeat so much. So you start off being like, oh, Dark Days Are Over. And then towards the end of it, you listen to those niche songs. And I think everyone needs to give Hardest of Hearts a go if you haven't listened to it.
I feel like you've definitely explained it in a way that makes a lot more sense to me. Not every song has to have lyrics that connect immediately, but this could be something that's holding it back from greatness.
Oh, no. I'm going to flip a table. Florence never says what she means very clearly.
That is totally true.
She goes round the houses to explain what she means. She's a poet.
I totally agree with that. But I feel like the songs that I connect to most with her, as much as her lyrics were over the place, I think musically it is there.
I see what you mean. So you almost listen to music and then divulge the lyrics.
And then the complexity of the lyrics unfurls and relates. But like, still like the euphoria that you feel within some of her other songs, it is the central feeling and it's core and it's immediate and it's there and it's well fashioned. Whereas this song feels, for me, slightly emotionally kind of slightly confused and slightly doesn't know exactly what it wants to be. And I think that could be to do with her youth. We'll see. At the end, I will decide. I will make my verdict at the end.
We're going to listen to it 5 more times before you do.
If you're loving what you're hearing and you want more, then head over to my Patreon. Over there, you can listen to the extended cut of every single episode where you can follow our every strange tangent that we go on. You can also watch the video version if that so pleases you. You can also get the chance to be part of the Patreon call-in episode where you can tell me your own underrated songs that you believe belong in the Criminally Underrated playlist. Criminally Underrated is a completely independent venture. So if you want to support me directly, then Patreon is the best place to do it. So yeah, head over to Patreon, search for Lucen. It is called The Crying Club, or you can click the link in the show notes. Anyway, back to the episode. Michael, would you like to introduce the second underrated song from Florence and the Machine?
I'm going to skip a little bit ahead now. So I'm going to go to Caught, which is in How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful.
How Big, How Blue, How Beautiful came out in 2015. It was after Ceremonials, which was the big dramatic peak and probably her most successful era, I think. And then comes the come down, the hangover. I've seen interviews about her talking about this album and how she got to the point, as she often does, where she decided that she doesn't think she'll be able to ever create any music ever again. So many times she's got to this point where she's like, I can't ever do more music. Like, I think she just gets there and then she's like, oh wait, no, I can.
Because she was pumping out the music at the start, wasn't she? Then there was like a much longer pause, and I think everybody was like on a case about when's the next album.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the pressure got to her, the party culture got to her, the drugs got to her, the alcohol got to her. I remember her saying in an interview, I didn't think I could write music without being drunk. She specifically talked about how Cosmic Love was one of the songs she was most proud of writing and how she wrote it like deathly hungover from a party. And I think she'd got it into her head at that point that that was what she needed to be creative. Mm-hmm. And that is like not a great way to be. And so she was in probably her darkest place at this point. And I think that's why the album sounds so completely different from everything else. And I think for that reason, this album in general remains quite underrated, because it was her exploring musical genres and musical themes and stuff that was completely different from what she'd done before. I think for her mental health, she needed to explore something that was totally different, completely not linked. Yeah, and I think that's why so much of this album remains underrated.
Yeah.
Michael, why have you picked this song out of any of this album, really? Because you could pick any of the songs in this album, probably. Why have you picked Caught as your underrated song?
So Caught for me is a very different energy to most of the songs, I think. It's very calm and quite restrained, I think. What I quite like about it is because this is three albums on. So at this point, she's a grown woman, to quote Beyonce.
Grown woman.
she's a grown woman, but also I think at this point, I find that she kind of knows who she is a little bit more. And her kind of relationship with love and her emotions, she knows how to articulate it. But she's exhausted by it.
Yeah.
And I think at this point she really understands her feelings, but she almost like doesn't want them in a way. The reason why it's underrated, again, it wasn't released as a single. It's not one of those songs from the album that people cite. Like, I listen to that album quite a lot. And it's that song that I just feel like I can't ever remember it being played on the radio or people talking about it. But I just really, it again, resonated with me quite a bit. She's talking about like, you know, like waking up and all you can think about is this person and kind of like how exhausting it is. And the only peace that she gets in it is when she's asleep. Like, that's the only time when like her brain just switches off a little bit. And I think there's like this type of lyric in it that says like, but I just feel like when I'm asleep, I get a break, but then it comes back stronger the next day. It's almost like charging it up, which I just really like. And she's talking about, you know, like she's just constantly wanting to pick up that phone. I think we've all had that kind of like, you know, that love for somebody where like it's almost like forbidden maybe, or like, I'm sorry.
Not me.
No, definitely.
None of that. We just went,
yeah, we were obnoxious quite quickly. But I think we've all had those feelings for somebody where you can't, you know, necessarily, you're even not allowed to articulate it, or you don't want to necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, it could be somebody in a relationship. It could be somebody, you know, it could be like a
straight guy.
We've all been there, haven't we? Straight men. So I think, again, this is why I probably resonated with that. It's kind of that, it's more accepting for me. And what I quite like about it, particularly like at the very start, it's very restrained for her, considering she's such like a powerhouse of a vocalist. And she does like, she shows off like her vocal skills in the song. But I think, especially
kind of
at the start,
unfurls later on, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very gentle and almost she sounds exhausted.
Yeah.
Which I really like. And I think she acts the song very well.
It's the hardest thing I ever had to do. To try and keep from calling you.
I think she was really in it when she was making
probably,
this album.
If we ever see it live.
By what I've heard of this album, it was like she was feeling it as she was writing and recording it. It was a very instant process. And so much of that is all over the performance in the vocals in most of the album, I'd say.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so, it's really cool.
And that's what I think it's always these curveball songs which kind of resonate with me, as I've kind of mentioned in the last one as well. Like, it's I think it's those unexpected songs of the album that just makes me kind of pause for a bit and go like, oh, what's this?
Oh, wow, this is actually beautiful.
Yeah, she has a lyric in it about Persephone, and like she's the goddess of like love, fertility, you know, and she's saying like Persephone will have a fill of me, essentially. Right. Just like she'll have a field day with how much love and like that I have in me.
Yeah,
right,
it's too
now
much,
but it's too much like for her to deal with.
Persephone will have
I think that's why, this is why I think it's underrated, just because I think like it's a really clever song.
Yeah.
But I don't think a lot of people listen to. But if anybody has had that moment of having those feelings and are exhausted by them and wish they could turn it off, I think this is the song that you should listen to.
Yeah. Wow. Honestly, I didn't think about it in that way. Like, given the context of what we were talking about, like how she wrote the album, like her previous relationship with drugs and alcohol, this might not be intentional. This might be metaphorical. This might mean both things. But there's a sense of addiction to this song. Throughout the day, she's like slogging along, trying to not think about this person, which could be a personification of drugs and alcohol, the party. And it's only when she's asleep does she actually get any respite from it. You know, it kind of works on different levels, especially like pulled apart against my will. For me, that relates to like the addiction and trying to, like, your will being, I don't want to be addicted to these things. But the thing inside you that's still pulling you towards that, the addiction that's still pulling you towards that, that's the pulling apart in a way that I feel. So yeah, really cool how this song could probably be interpreted in so many different other ways.
I think that's the thing with Florence's music. Like, I've never made that connection, but you can probably interpret it in a lot of different ways.
There's lyrics that I wrote down that I wanted to talk about.
Oh, okay.
I was thrashing on the line somewhere between desperate and divine. Like,
genius.
That lyric. Oh my God. There's so many things that could mean. There's so much depth within that. But the thrashing, I'm picturing somebody, you know, maybe going cold turkey and thrashing about.
Oh, yeah.
On the line of Coca-Cola. I don't know. There's little things in there that could be considered in that way. Somewhere between desperate and divine, there's like a feeling of like the divine, the euphoria that you feel within that kind of culture. Mm. But the desperation too is always underneath. And that's kind of like within that kind of party heightened culture, the desperate and the divine are like hand in hand.
Nice.
Music side of things. I adore like the vocal harmony stuff, all the detailed layers. That's what I really love about some of her later stuff, is that it goes a bit slower and really goes in on like the kind of sound design side of it rather than the kind of more frantic nature of the earlier albums. And that's something that I really appreciate about her more modern artistry. This song really has that. But also, interesting wrinkle about the song and why it's kind of strange to me. The final chorus, it has different chords. Starts in a minor key and resolves into the relative major. So C major, all the white notes on the piano, for instance, has a relevant minor key, which is A minor, which use all the same notes. So actually, when you're writing a song, you can kind of play about with, is it in A minor? Is it in C major? Don't know, uses all the same notes. But what you can do, which I think this is what she's done, I haven't actually looked up the chords, so this might be completely wrong, but what it sounds like is that she's set up the resolution to go back into A minor, but instead she's resolved into the equivalent major home chord within that key. This musical phrasing at the end, the way she uses the major version of it, gives it this like lift, which is really beautiful. I do find really beautiful, but I wonder why.
Maybe that's a kind of like even accepting it more, just like, oh well, it is what it
and
is.
And yeah, maybe, yeah, it is what it is. Maybe that's the feeling.
Here
and
we go.
Maybe like what you were saying about having too many emotions and stuff. Maybe at that point she's just like, I am who I am, and I guess maybe this is just how I'm going to feel forever. She kind of gives up on trying to control it, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay, so final song. What song do you have for me as the final song?
Okay, this is actually my favourite song. Okay. And this is why I think it's horrifically underrated.
Horrifically underrated. It's written behind you.
Shall we change the name of this podcast quick? Okay, so sorry. Reset. The announcement of my final song to show you, which I believe is criminally underrated, is All This in Heaven 2, which is from the album Ceremonies.
Ceremonials was Florence's second album. This was her first album after she really hit it big. And rather than it being the second album blues situation, it really was the making of her. Mm-hmm. She really broke in America. I think Shake It Off was probably the biggest song from... Oh, Shake It Out. Sorry, it's called Shake It Out, not Shake It Off, lol. Shake It Out.
Is this Taylor again?
Shut up. Shake It Out is probably the biggest song from this album.
This was her album.
The big era.
Yeah.
Why have you picked All This in Heaven 2 as your underrated song?
Again, such an album of bangers, but very cohesive as an album.
Yeah.
Unlike maybe the first one was. But again, the song All This in Heaven, I don't think it's mentioned quite. It was never released as a single. I don't think it's ever on the tip of anyone's tongue when they talk about Florence. And I think from when I talk about the song to people, because it is my favorite Florence song, they go, what? They don't know what I'm talking about.
They
can list several Florence songs that I think everybody can, but this is not one. And I think it needs to be.
Mm.
I can understand my other two choices might be a bit niche for me, but like if you like Florence and you like those kind of like big numbers that she does.
Yeah.
This is a big number.
Yeah.
It starts off with the hardest of hearts.
Wait, is that what the lyric is?
It's something like that.
And the hardest heart, the heart is hard to translate. Yeah.
And the heart is hard to translate. It has a language of its own.
It's kind of following on from this kind of articulation from the first album that I was talking about. It's on, for me, it's like the kind of like growth. The hardest of hearts, which I was talking about before, is that kind of like, you know, like you have all these feelings and you know what you kind of want to say, but it's just not coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
And then this song is like verbal diarrhea. It's like you have the feelings, you're accepting them, and you want to scream from the top of your lungs, but you don't understand how to articulate it.
No words could measure the amount of love I feel. I've been scrawling it forever, but it never makes sense to me at all.
Yes.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Scrawling it, you know, as if she's like frantically trying to communicate how she feels through her words, and yet it never is satisfying. She still doesn't truly understand what it is to be in love.
Yes. And I think it also relates to the other two songs as well, and is that kind of like sometimes you cause a bit of damage by what you're saying because you didn't say the right thing.
She's
so almost like excited about love, almost.
Yeah.
That she's just spitfiring these words.
Yeah. And it could be damaging, yeah.
One of the lines which I love is the words are all escaping, but coming back all damaged.
Yeah.
And the words are all escaping.
Saying this with the best intentions, then it's coming back just like, oh god, no, that's not what I meant. And then like it's almost like it's so desperate as a song to understand love and understand her emotions.
To say I would give all of this,
all of my life,
everything that I have got to this point, my entire life, and heaven, my future in heaven, the grandiose, the levels of that.
Yeah.
I will give all of this and heaven too if I could just understand.
This is it.
And put into words what it is to be in love. It's so good.
I remember, you know, a lot of like female pop artists or male pop artists were in relation to like, I don't need you. Like, I've got myself. I'm an independent person. It was all that kind of like rebellious stuff. One of my favorite artists of all time is Amy Winehouse. And she was saying, she really responds more to that music where it's just like, I know it's not the right thing to say. I'm known, I'm going, but I'm so deeply overwhelmed with love, I'm just going to stand in the middle of the street and just scream and cry. And that's what I get from this song. This is the underrated song for those people that like Florence and know Florence's big numbers. And this is one of those numbers where I was confused why it wasn't a big number.
I think I have an answer for you. I think there's a reason why it's underrated and why it probably wasn't picked as a single. And that's because there's a musical thing that's going on. When the song starts, it's in E major.
E major.
And the heart is hard to translate. It has a language of its own.
So it starts in E major. When you go into the pre-chorus and then the chorus, it changes key dramatically. The chorus is in C major and the verse is in E major. And when you actually look at the notes that those actually include, they're like a completely different set of notes.
And it talks to me in tiptoes, and it sings to me inside. And I would give all this and heaven too.
In terms of like music theory, if you want to do a key change that's really smooth, you would use another key that has mostly the same notes. So for instance, you go from C major to F major because there's only one note difference between those two, and it feels like a smooth transition. If you want to create a key change that is jarring, then you use a key that doesn't share very many notes. And that's the thing. E major doesn't even have the note of C in it. Mm. And I think that might be why, although as a deep listener, as somebody who appreciates complexity within music, you would really appreciate the emotion and like what that is creating, you know, it does feel like a jarring drop into the verse, and that is on purpose, you know. For a casual listener, I feel like that would not be seen as a mainstream choice.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
And that, I think that's why it's an underrated song, is because I feel like if a casual fan of music were to listen to this, they would probably bounce off the weird kind of jarring feeling of that. It's supposed to be sense to me at all, but it goes sense to me at all. It's like, yeah, boom, and we go to E, and it's like, whoa, what's going on here? And yes,
I
love it. Yeah. For the record, I love it too. I think it's really weird and great.
I think I could just really feel what she's saying with it. And I think like that's what it sounds like as well. And I think I think, although I don't understand technically what's going on and what note that she's hitting, but I can hear those like loud grand moments of it, like thump, almost back to reality.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that interpretation of the way that the sound design dictates that. The other way round, it kind of feels like this tension building thing that when it erupts into C major in the chorus, it's so unexpected, but it's so bright because of the key that we've been in before, and that kind of drop into a slightly more minor place for the pre-chorus, it means that that build into the chorus is all the more satisfying because it kind of lifts into a totally new place and really does give you that sense of like euphoria. It like sends you off. And that's kind of where using slightly alternative key changes and stuff can really like make music that is so much more evocative and full and rich and emotionally compelling than just sticking to your regular diatonic harmony, mm-hmm, and sticking to the same set of notes throughout the whole song. And that's why this is great. Is there anything else you'd like to say about any of these three songs before I make my verdict?
I believe all three songs should be considered together as a collective.
Of course you do.
The reason why these three songs really resonate with me is almost like it's such like an internal battle with love, mm, and every single one of them in different ways in different stages of her life. You start off with Hardest of Hearts, which is just like almost like she's feeling something and she doesn't want it. Like she's just like, stop being so difficult. Like, mm, just play along. And then this song where she's just like, do you know what? Actually, this feels great. This feels amazing to be this in love with somebody, but I just don't know how to say it. Nothing in that I have or own is enough to articulate how I'm feeling. Mm. And then the third album, which is finally, she understands herself. She understands the love. And she's a bit fed up with it. Like, yeah. She's just exhausted
by
it.
Wow, that is really like the progression there.
Yeah.
Of like getting to the point where you're like, so full of feelings and the brilliance and the beauty of that, but getting to a point where like actually it's quite exhausting. Yeah, it really, like, you end up kind of following her growth as a human being in that, yeah, point, because I think I've gone through that, you know. I'm a very, very emotional person, so I relate to Court in that way, you know, where it's like I love that part of myself, but it's also kind of a curse sometimes. But then I kind of got to the point where actually maybe the same point that she gets to at the end of Court, where it's, it is what it is. It is who I am. Mm. I can't change myself. I just have to learn to cope with it
better.
It's the
acceptance bit. Yeah,
it's the acceptance bit, right? And that's like, and actually everything in life has beautiful sides and dark sides. And, you know, I shouldn't expect to be able to live without the dark stuff, because then I wouldn't get the high stuff.
And the most emotional people write the best songs. Like, look at Florence, look at Adele, look at
my debut EP coming out next month.
Isn't it?
It will be when this goes out.
Oh, I see. But yes, that's why I really like those songs. And I think, yeah, those three albums, her growth was kind of reflecting in my life as well. Yeah. From that teenage angst to that being in your late 20s and just going, oh, this is what love is.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. All right, let's go.
It's exhausting.
Can I just give like...
Oh, sorry, carry on.
Thank you. I want to give them the best shot they can. So the first one, Hardest of Hearts, what I just love about it is that it's just so different from the other songs. And I think musically, it's just really interesting. It just captures that sense of anxiety really well. It's overwhelming without it going like, massive musical number. It's almost like that internalized anxiety that I think she captures really well. Yeah. And I think what's really clever about it is just that jumping between, I don't know what to say, or, you know, but kind of struggling to articulate. I'm just like, why don't you just say this? And then the chorus is what she's wanting to say. So it's almost like these kind of two alternate realities. And then suddenly it just dives back into, but I'm just in this anxious state where I just don't know what to say. All this in heaven too. Big, grand, musically interesting, as you clarified yourself in your words. But again, it's that kind of like internalized conversation again with herself of just like, you know, like, I will give all this in heaven, this kind of like big, grand. You can picture her just like running through clouds at that point, you know, just like, I will give you all of this if you will just let me articulate what I'm feeling inside. Mm-hmm. And then it just crashes back into reality.
Yeah.
And then that... And then that caught one, it's just that autumn day of just walking around and just fed up, really tired. It's almost like if she only ever sang those three songs, that the third one almost sounds like she hit so many massive notes on the last one, her voice is tired. Like she's just like, she can't even talk
anymore. Vocally tired, emotionally tired.
She's just like, I am exhausted.
Yeah.
I can't keep skipping around heaven shouting. You know, like I just need a cup of tea and a lie down is what she's saying. That she's even talking about how much like of a relief sleep is in that song.
Yeah, shit.
And that's why, and none of those songs, I believe, are songs that people will instantly think of when they think of Florence. But I think they should.
So you've made quite the case.
I'm taking this assignment very seriously.
Okay, so now's the time for my verdict. Just so people know, like, for me, for a song to be criminally underrated, it not only has to be underrated and therefore, you know, not talked about much, but it also has to have something about it, musically, production-wise, that elevates it to a place where it's truly a brilliant song and you cannot understand why nobody else understands how good the song is. Starting off with Hardest of Hearts.
I'm so nervous.
Maybe this song will be a grower, but for me at the moment, I feel like it's a little bit too kind of emotionally confused. I feel like it doesn't quite kind of stop gasping at what I'm saying.
I will flip a table.
I think for me, the first album is a bit hit or miss, and this one ends up being a little bit of a miss for me. The way her songcraft gets so much better and she gets far better articulating what she's, you know, trying to put through in a song, and therefore this song doesn't quite hit the mark. I do really enjoy it and I love your interpretation of it and everything, but as I stand right now, I'm going to say that it's not criminally underrated. It is just underrated. And
like
good.
Florence in that song, I am struggling to articulate my feelings right now.
Excuse me.
Without turning to pure violence.
You knew what this podcast entails.
This is not what I agreed to.
You're part of me coming up with the bloody idea for this podcast. It was all your fault. Okay, so on to the next one, which was Caught.
Yes.
I'm still undecided. I'm still kind of on the fence. There's so much about this song that I find so beautiful. I think it has that kind of musical element that's quite interesting. And I love that you actually came up with a reason for why it feels more like open and major and happy at the end. And that actually really feels very clever, feels like multi-leveled, feels like it could mean so many different things. There's lots of individual moments of poetry. It's catchy. Okay, I'm going to say it. Okay.
Yes.
So Caught is a criminally underrated.
Yes!
Florence and the Machine song. And it truly is, I don't think I've ever had anybody ever talk about the song.
No.
So
nobody does.
And they should, because it is really clever. Yay, well done.
Yay. Okay.
Okay, now for the final song, All This in Heaven 2. I came into this unsure because as much as I think the song has so much kind of euphoria to it, the key change is balmy. Like it is, like truly, not many people would have the balls to do something quite so sense to me at all. Like for the fact that it resolves onto the note below, it feels like so like jagged and weird. But I think in talking about it and in analysing it, I really kind of realised that the reason that the euphoric moment hits in the way it does is because of the music and because of that strange key change. You wouldn't get, I will give all this at heaven to, without the weirdness in the key changing. And it does give itself so much euphoria, which really plays into the stakes of the lyrics. I would give everything I have in my entire life and the afterlife if I could just understand and articulate what it is to truly be in love. It's just peak in it. And it just goes like, it just, it's just so beautiful. And therefore, I'm going to say that it is criminally underrated.
Oi.
So you've done two out of three.
Okay. He's wrong about Hardest of Hearts. This should have been a 3 out of 3. And for those of you listening, if you haven't heard that song, please listen to it because it is great.
For anybody listening, make sure to follow the podcast, rate the podcast, and leave a review. Let me know what you think about it. This is a completely independent venture and it's my first ever podcast series. So I need your feedback, what you liked, what you didn't like. And obviously I want to hear your opinions on all of the songs that we've chosen today. If you want to get involved and be part of the Patreon episode where your song might actually be featured in the episode, you can go through to the Patreon where you can also watch the video version or listen to the extended cut of the podcast as well. Thank you, Michael, for joining me on the podcast. I mean, you didn't have a choice. You were always going to be on here. You needed to be on here. You are basically co-creator at this point. We want to know, we like genuinely want to know what you think about our opinions and about Florence as well.
I really want to know what they'd choose as well. Because I'd really struggle trying to think what was actually criminally underrated because I think I had a lot of... Yeah, it's actually really hard.
Within a review, you can write those kinds of things or make sure to go over to Instagram and comment on the posts about this episode. That'd be another good way to connect with me because I'll read all those comments unless they're horrible and then I won't. I hope you all have a lovely rest of your day, whenever you're listening to this.
Whatever you're listening.
We've been Dan and Michael on Radio 103.2. Thank you so much for joining. We'll see you next time. No, you won't. You'll hear us next time. Whatever. Bye.
Bye.